Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from a basement in suburban New York City and an apartment in Brooklyn. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
EPL back for more, Andrew. That's what's up.
EPL back for more for the second time this year. You know, it's funny because I see the Twitter comments from people who want to hear that, who want me to do a new one. Look, it happened. And just be happy that it happened. Because I did it once doesn't mean that I'm going to continue to do it. It's not a recurring character on the show. I made a complete and utter ass of myself. All right. And I'm a willing ass. I'm happy to play that role every once in a while. But every time the Premier League farts, I'm not going to come on and sing EPL back for more. All right. If you're someone who doesn't know what we're talking about, I don't know. Is it Googleable? Is it even like a thing that lives on the internet? I sang a song about the Premier League coming back.
Hang on.
2017 to the tune of Billy Joel's "We Didn't Start the Fire," and I wrote my own lyrics. And I thought it was in my head. I had envisioned something brilliant and glorious that JJ was supposed to be a part of, and he heard my practice recording. He said, "I will not be a part of this. It will ruin careers."
No.
And so he then, in addition to that, then forced me to air it. People want to continue to hear it. And I'm not going to do that every time the Premier League starts up.
Will you tell the truth? I heard it and I creased over laughing so hard that I almost folded into myself. I nearly disappeared. I was laughing so hard. And look, I don't expect you to do it every time. You had some killer lines in it. Like, some of the lines were so good. And forced Glenn Johnson to Stoke City, you know. But what got me was your enthusiasm. And I hope people are as enthusiastic for the return of the Premier League and to listen to this podcast as they would be for EPL Back for More.
I only know one way, JJ. Go big or go home. What a show we do have, because the EPL is, in fact, back for more. This is, I don't know, I feel like we've kind of gone and done a second EPL preview podcast with like what we've got here for you tonight. We're going to go through all angles of the league as it prepares for its restart, which commences on Wednesday. So we'll go through the title race, not that there is one, but, you know, the battle for the top four, relegation battles, really whatever you are kind of craving, I guess. Hopefully we'll hit on it for you tonight. We will get to a couple other things in Germany. Also La Liga, which started up over the past weekend. We've got a great mailbag here. Excited about some of these questions. This should be fun. I'm also very excited, JJ, that Kevin Durant is now one of us. Minority owner, 5% stake of the Philadelphia Union. That's awesome. Welcome aboard, KD.
What does 5% even get you of the Philadelphia Union?
Well, that is a legitimate question. Financially, I could do the math. I forget what their valuation is for them, but I don't know. However, when you're him, I'm sure he will be in some way, I would think, a visible face. Like, he's super famous. He's cool. Like, it's definitely like an image I'm sure that the Union are happy to be associated with, even though he has no ties to Philadelphia. He's still a sports personality that resonates. So, you know, in a city that's sports crazy. So who knows? I don't know. I'm sure they'll find some kind of role for him. He put money in. 5% is money.
And it was really the only place he could have invested into. I don't think it would have been possible to invest into City Football Group in the Bronx or into the Red Bull organization in New Jersey. So it's just a trip down the turnpike from Brooklyn. So
yeah. Super. I saw it. I thought, wow, that's pretty cool.
Thank you for clogging up the wheels of the Premier League comeback with MLS talk.
All right. So, well, you're right. You're right. I'm sorry, everyone. You know, that's only a podcast based in the United States where I'm mentioning a major transaction in the
international audience.
Here we go. The EPL resumes. So I'll do kind of to start out here what I did when the Bundesliga was coming back, and that's just kind of give you the like the barest of the bare essentials of what you need to know before we even get to the teams themselves. So everybody's got 9 games remaining except for Sheffield United, Aston Villa, Manchester City, and Arsenal. They have 10. They all play on Wednesday to get on the same page with everyone else. So once we get to Friday, or once we get past Wednesday, everyone will have 9 games left. There won't be any of this games at hand nonsense that kind of clutters things up. So I'll go through some of this, JJ. I went deep here because this is from the Telegraph India, where I, for whatever reason, chose to find some of this info. I'm sure it's also on the Premier League's official website, but that's not how we roll here. We're different. So all the remaining games obviously are going to be played without fans and a limit of 300 people in the ground, similar to what it was in the Bundesliga. Different levels of the stadiums will have different types of personnel. That includes broadcast staff, written media, commentators, doping officials, scouts. They'll all be allowed in stadiums on match days. Other measures include deep cleaning of corner flags, goalposts, substitution boards, match balls. Medical staff are going to wear protective equipment when treating players, which I would have thought that would kind of been the case in the past anyway, but maybe not. Players are going to be tested for coronavirus at their club's training ground ahead of journeys to stadiums for matches. Teams are going to take the field separately rather than side by side. Games will feature drink breaks midway through each half. Substitutes and managers on the bench will not be required to wear masks. I know that had been the subject of some discussion as to whether or not managers would be asked to do so, subs as well, but they will not be required to. And players do not have to wear masks when entering the stadium or dressing room. And by the way, substitutions increase to 5 per match, as we've seen in other leagues around Europe as well. Any issues with any of this? Any concerns with any of this?
No, I read that there was a designated celebration camera as well, so that the cameramen on the sideline would not be mobbed with players and be in close contact. There will be one camera that will be set aside if you want to do something into the camera. I was listening to Mark Albrighton, and I'm not so much interested in what happens in and around the stadium. I haven't seen the Bundesliga. I thought it would broadly follow their lead on that. What's interesting to me was what Mark Albrighton was talking about in terms of the change to the match day habit now. So they're going to be, like in many cases, they're going to be traveling independently to games. You're going to come more or less togged out. You're going to be more or less in your kit. This is real Sunday League stuff.
This is mom and dad driving you and your friend in a carpool to your game.
Okay. I have an image of like Jamie Vardy and Mo Salah in their respective cars with their shin guards already on, socks pulled up to the thighs. Yeah. Also, the pre-match meal, there will be no communal pre-match meal. You will eat yourself. You will. Now, I'm sure there'll be guidelines put out. It's the Premier League. I'm sure the meals will be prepped and possibly even sent to the houses. It wouldn't shock me. They won't leave it to them to cook to chance to test their culinary skills. But all those things have really given this a different feel and a different flavor. And yeah, this is the kind of thing that the players have to adjust to. They've been looked after since, 14, 15 in most cases, meal prep, game preparation, more or less looked after. And now we're in this new world, and I wonder what percentage difference that makes to performance on the day.
Yeah, we'll see. The substitutions being increased to 5 per match, we haven't really talked about that with the other leagues, but I wanted to bring it up now just because anything that's done in the name of health and well-being of these players, I'm not gonna fight it. However, I do view the 5 substitutions per match with a bit of a raised eyebrow, only in that, at least I believe it is a rule that's being instituted that heavily favors the big 6 clubs. I do feel that way. Their depth, like, they'll be able to now bring guys in late in matches that they, you know, their opposition is going to look at and say, oh my God, when does this end? And other team, you know, like your Bournemouths just simply don't have the kind of firepower 5 deep that your Chelsea's and your Manchester City's above all else that, you know, that these clubs do. So I get the rule. I understand why they're instituting it. But, you know, let's not kid ourselves. That is certainly a rule that will help the top clubs. At least that's how I see it.
No, 100% it will. It'll just be interesting to see if there's any clever variation on how the substitutes are used. We saw early on in Bundesliga games where a lot of teams weren't using their full complement of substitutes towards the end of games. So I wonder, will there be any variation in the Premier League and how they do that?
Yeah, we'll see how this all goes. I mean, like we saw with the Bundesliga with Giovanni Reyna on the first day, you know, injuries are going to happen. It's going to play a role. There's no way around it. It's an unfortunate element of this, but, you know, you hope that the increased substitutions, the drink breaks, whatever training has gone on of late, you hope that they can limit it as much as possible, because we would like, you know, we want to see the real deal. We want to see the product that we saw in the first 6 months or whatever it was of the season. So let's get to it now. We broke this down in a few categories. We'll start with the title race. That, of course, belongs to Liverpool. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. We have said that for months now. We've said for months now that they are not competing against anyone in this league. They're competing only against history. So I guess, you know, we'll run through a couple questions with them. There's not much to say. I guess the one thing that I'm curious to ask you right now is, so like, is there anything left in the remainder of this season for you as a Liverpool supporter that you're curious about? Like, they're going to win the title. We all know that, but does this points record, like, is there any way that you could exit this restart and not feel good about how the season ends? It's unfathomable to me to think that they wouldn't catch the points record, but if they don't, you know, like, is there any way to end this season not feeling good?
I mean, we haven't seen them in so long. They come out, they turn up flat. Of course, that can leave a taste in the mouth, even when they eventually clinch the title. For me, and also for behind the scenes at Liverpool, according to an article in The Athletic, the points total is a serious target for them. It's renewed and reinvigorated them, and there's apparently a real bounce at training, and it has become a focus of what they want to do. But for me, Andrew, it's just about getting this over the line, getting it done. It's 30 years. I feel like, you know, I want it over as quickly as possible, that league title is secured. And I won't be, because it's such unique and weird circumstance, I don't think I'll be overly upset if, you know, there's not the perfect performances after that's done. I just want it done. And I've been thinking about this team and what they've achieved. It's unbelievable, Andrew, to think that in the 18-19 season, they matched the most expensively put together team in English football history, who were Centurions, and went as close to toe-to-toe with them as was possible, took them right to the line. And in the following season, then swung it in like 25 points clear of that challenge. I mean, I always thought Liverpool would be Manchester City's closest rival, but for them to flip the script completely in such unbelievable fashion, it's been immense, absolutely immense. And for me, I want that trophy confirmed, everything, all the things crossed and the I's dotted, and I just want it done now at this point. That's the way I feel about it. But I am kind of really curious that, and kind of heartened by the fact that Klopp has said to them, look, let's chase this other record.
So I have a question for you here. Later in the podcast, in the mailbag, there was a question about Liverpool, and I'm wondering if you want to bump that up to now.
Okay.
So let me see if I can find it here. It dealt with the possibility of Liverpool. Okay, it was from Mark Michael on Twitter. And he said, hey, @CO Soccer Pod, longtime listener, first time tweeter, love the show. Do you think this could be the beginning of a dynasty for the Reds? I'm slightly concerned with the lack of ambition, i.e. Timo Werner, but have faith in Klopp. Thoughts? So I wanted to respond to that, and I wonder if you'll feel the same about this. First of all, in terms of it being the beginning of a dynasty, that's a subjective term, but I would say I see absolutely no reason whatsoever why they are not the favorites heading into next season. To me, I mean, we'll see what Manchester City do to reload, and we'll talk about Chelsea and the direction that they're headed coming up in a little bit. But there's no reason to me that Liverpool should not be going into next season as the favorites. I think they've done enough in distancing themselves from the rest of the pack this year to at least buy themselves that goodwill heading into next year. The idea of lack of ambition is interesting to me. To me, that is hardcore prisoner of the moment. Not getting Timo Werner does not equal this club showing a lack of ambition, because they went out and they signed Virgil van Dijk, and they did so for a world record fee for a defender. They needed a new goalkeeper. They went out, they signed Alisson Becker for a world record fee for a goalkeeper. So it's, to me, it's not, it's just not accurate, and it's not fair to say that this club has shown a lack of ambition. I can't buy that. Now, if they allow guys to leave, like if Sadio Mane wants to go to Real Madrid, or if, you know, Barcelona come in for Trent Alexander-Arnold, then like, and those guys go, we can talk about that. But I don't understand why that would happen. So yeah, I don't know. I think they're here to stay. I really do.
Yeah, just the lack of ambition thing. We can't have come this far under the guidance of Jurgen Klopp and particularly the sporting director, Michael Edwards, and then suddenly get upset because one of the transfer targets, although albeit a long-standing one, we decided that we weren't going to pay that amount of money for him. I don't think that's lack of ambition, and we don't know what they're working on behind the scenes. I would be very surprised if there aren't more additions. Maybe they mightn't be the big, you know, name and light signing like Timo Werner, but I would be shocked if, for example, we know Lallana is leaving. We know that it's more than likely Jordan Checiri is going to move on. So there'll be players to come in. They may not be the big name like Timo Werner. Another thing, there's a football writer who writes occasionally for ESPN, and he's got a blog, Ryan O'Hanlon. His blog is No Grass on the Clouds, which is obviously a link to a comment made by the great Brian Clough. But he kind of broke down the why Liverpool may not have gone for Timo Werner. And this isn't a lack of ambition issue so much as, you know better than anyone how FSG operate, Andrew. You've seen it with the Boston Red Sox. A very successful year where they spend a lot of money on, say, someone like, who was it, Mookie Betts or
whatever. Well, they refused to keep him.
Right. But they, very successful year, what do? They generally pull back and they can have quite poor seasons following. And that's baseball. I'm not saying Liverpool will be bad next season, but there's a general tightening of the purse strings. And it wouldn't be a shock that FSG would say, well, listen, we've been through this really constrained time with COVID-19. We are looking at money. We're looking at the profit margins. We're looking at everything. And we're not going to pay X or Y for Timo Werner beyond what we feel his valuation is.
Yeah. And, you know, some of it also is, like, I think Chelsea actually, who look like they're going to wind up getting Timo Werner, I think they're actually the perfect example of this conversation. Because, you know, if you want to talk about lack of ambition, if Chelsea refused to go and spend the extra money to get him, we could have that conversation if you were a Chelsea supporter, because they've got Tammy Abraham up front. And then they're still asking a lot from Olivier Giroud. Like, if Chelsea want to be true title contenders, Olivier Giroud playing a key role for you up front when you know Pedro is going to be leaving, Willian's going to be leaving, like, then we could talk about a lack of ambition. But Liverpool are so loaded at those spots with, you know, Salah, Mane, and Firmino in the front three, Origi, who, say what you want about him, every time he comes in off the bench, he scores a huge goal for this club. You know, so it's not a problem area for Liverpool. If they go out and get Timo Werner, we're kind of bordering on like the territory of glutton. So like, I don't know. I don't know. Something about that.
I disagree with that. I don't think Liverpool are as deep as you think they are. And I think there's going to be cover needed in both the fullback positions, in center midfield in some areas. And like I said, when those two guys move on, you're going to need players forward, attacking players to come in. But Timo Werner is not going to accept himself as secondary to any of that front three. So I know what you mean there about gluttony as well. Look, Chelsea money and billionaire money is still plentiful for Abramovich in a way that you know, they don't have to think about financial concerns in quite the same way that a club that is owned by FSG and run by FSG is. But look, lack of ambition. I can't say that when I don't know what's going on behind the scenes as well.
109 points, JJ. It could, that could be what they do. It would so distance themselves from the previous record. If you're a Liverpool player, I understand turning that into like how Michael Jordan would kind of set artificial goals to continue motivating himself to be greater and greater. Like, if you're Liverpool, I think you have to look at that and say, let's end this season where we are going to force people to have to look at us as being the greatest EPL single season team in history.
it makes total sense. You've got to put something on the wall and say, that's the aim now, guys. Yeah. No complacency. And it doesn't shock me that Jurgen Klopp is doing that.
So that's the title race. There's no other team worth mentioning here because that's it. It's done. It could be over in two wins is what it would take, or just a twist of 6 points, I guess, in some way.
Well, I mean, if Arsenal do a job against Manchester City and then Liverpool win in the derby, that's that.
So. Right. So some kind of 6 point accumulation, whether that be through a City loss or two Liverpool wins, that's all it will take. Let's go now quickly. We'll do the battle for the top four here. It feels like this is half the league is in contention for this. And I almost wonder if there's teams that we're not going to talk about here where their fans are going to say, hey, what about us? That will still feel like they should be involved. I'll just go in order of starting in third. I'm not going to really include second place Manchester City, kind of for a couple reasons. One, the main one being their transfer – or not transfer ban, their UEFA competition ban, their Champions League ban that is currently in effect, kind of has them out of the running temporarily. So that's the main reason to not include them in this conversation. However, even then, if that is to be overturned, I wouldn't include them in the conversation either because I feel like they're pretty safe. Mm-hmm. So either way, we'll just kind of continue without them and go to Leicester City, who are the top of the pack for the front runners right now. 53 points. They played 29 matches up to this point. Yeah, I was wondering something about them in particular. Of all the teams vying for top four qualification, is it fair to say that it's most vital for them to go on and actually do it?
I saw that in the rundown, and could you clarify that question for me? What do you mean? Why is it most vital? Because they won't get an opportunity again. This is a golden opportunity to break that top four, like we said at the start of the season.
Not just to break the top four. I'm saying if not now. There's kind of an if not now, when for them. The same things that we said about Real Sociedad last week. Like, what's going to happen? There's a good chance that, even if they do qualify for the Champions League, they could have their roster torn to shreds. But if Leicester City qualify, then, like, there's a chance they keep these guys together, they keep this team together intact, and they go for at least one run in the Champions League together. If they don't, then, you know, you're going to have a hard time keeping a Chilwell or Ndidi, you know, these great players that have gotten them into this position, James Maddison. So if they don't do it now, to me, a lot of these guys are going to go, and Leicester will probably fall back to being mid-table next year. And, you know, I have enough faith in them where I think in a couple years they could get their next crop of guys through and maybe be back in this position again. But who knows? Tomorrow's promised to nobody. So to me, I kind of feel like they've got to strike now.
Especially since they've been ensconced in the top four for quite a large part of the season now.
No, we're at a point where if you're a Leicester fan, this season is a disappointment if they don't qualify.
Correct. And you know what? You're right, because, I was looking at who's been one of their most important players this season. And I just thought about what Brendan Rodgers, it wasn't entirely Brendan Rodgers, because I'm sure Leicester had identified him beforehand, but Sonochu at centre-back, you think how brilliant he's been, and he's on the radar right now of Manchester City, he's on the radar of Real Madrid apparently, and Barcelona. He's had such an outstanding season for them, and Leicester were ahead of the curve on that. They probably knew they were going to lose Maguire, and the next thing, they've slid in a centre-back who you could argue is got more upside than Maguire, and maybe may even be a better center back. So you're right. They kind of have to strike when the iron's hot right now. They have at least four or five players that they can't guarantee that they'll hang on to unless they're playing, can guarantee Champions League football. So that, but maybe you're right. There's a real immediacy to what they have to do. And I think they'll get it done. I expect them to get it done.
I think so too. Now I will say this, obviously there is no playoff in the Premier League. However, it kind of feels like there will be one for Leicester to round out their campaign, because four of their final five matches are Arsenal, Sheffield United, Tottenham, and Manchester United. So, I mean, you can make a case about Arsenal and Tottenham, just how much of a contender they are, but we'll include them and say that four of Leicester City's final five matches are going to be against teams that they might be in direct competition with for one of those Champions League spots. So it will be an interesting close. Yeah. We'll go from Leicester now to fourth place Chelsea, 48 points, 29 matches played. We talked about Chelsea before the year, and we talked about their expectations. We didn't, I think of all the teams that we talked about, theirs seemed to be the most ambiguous and unclear.
Well,
and
I put them in third. I'm on the record.
Okay, so I'm just wondering then if you would say right now if they have, in your eyes, met or exceeded expectations.
I think when I go back, and I did say on a Chelsea podcast that they'd be in third, I was kind of placating, I was playing to the gallery a little bit, but not really. I think they've exceeded expectations in the sense that Andrew, Frank Lampard is the least experienced manager of the entire Premier League. And he had to navigate a transfer ban. He had to basically kind of, look, he had top quality Premier League winners in N'Golo Kanté. We know that. He had experienced players in the side as well, Azpilicueta, Marcus Alonso. I understand all that, but he still had to put his stamp on this team. And you consider how badly they started at Old Trafford. I mean, how worried were we after that hiding they got from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's side? So I think he's done a pretty good job. And I think it's been recognized by Roman Abramovich and the board, who've backed him for the future, at least after doing nothing in January. So he had nobody come in January. He's made some decisions. Getting rid of David Luiz in the summer wasn't exactly an easy decision to make. I think they're not great at the back. I still think they need to be tweaked. The goalkeeping position is, for me at least anyway, still in a little bit of flux. But midfield going forward and what they're about to add in Timo Werner and Hakim Ziyech, Christian Pulisic coming back, you know, I think Lampard has done a really good job. And I think that's been reflected in the board backing him right now. I think they've exceeded expectations.
I think so too. I don't think this season for them was ever supposed to be about winning a title or even necessarily contending for a title. I think really this season has kind of been, I mean, we'll see how it ends, but it's kind of been almost a dream for them in that this season has allowed them to break in all of these young players through their youth system, which is not ordinarily a thing that Chelsea do. And it's gone so well for many of these guys where they can either A, keep them and continue to just have these guys grow as players on their own team, or if they kind of want to go back to their old Chelsea ways, they can sell these guys and they can probably make an enormous profit off of them now because, you know, not only are they players who are considered to be high prospects, a lot of them have proven that they can do it at this level and be really good players. So, you know, they can make money that way and go use that on the transfer market to bring in whoever they feel are even more established to kick them on into a title race. So this season has gone, I think, better than Chelsea fans could have really hoped.
I think it's gone well. I think one thing that's kind of brought them crashing down to earth is that they have been inconsistent at moments in the Premier League, but the chasing they got in Europe really kind of exposed maybe where they need to get to. But overall, if you're looking at a rookie manager in his first Premier League season, you can't be too upset if you're a Chelsea fan.
No, definitely not. Christian Pulisic, we should mention, he's back healthy. This is great after his adductor muscle injury, which we thought was going to keep him out for who knows how much more of the season, but it looks like he'll be back. He took part in their last exhibition game. I didn't see it, but from what I read, it sounds like he played pretty well. They scored 7 goals. So that's great, obviously, for him to be involved. We'll see if he walks right back into the starting lineup. That is promised to no one, but something to feel good about. And one other thing I did want to note, because we mentioned this a couple weeks ago, and now that there's been some resolution to it, it's only fair to mention it again. Callum Hudson-Odoi will face no additional legal action over an alleged rape accusation. He released a statement. I've stayed silent and assisted the police fully throughout their inquiries, as I knew the day would soon come when my name would be cleared. Following a full and thorough investigation, the police have now confirmed they will take no further action. I have learned that being a footballer and playing for one of the best clubs in the world comes with a great responsibility, and going forward, I will try and use my platform as a Chelsea player to be the best role model that I can be. So
that
ends that.
Yes.
Let's see now. We move on from fourth to fifth. Manchester United, 3 points back of Chelsea, 45 points, 29 matches played. This fifth spot is that really, really interesting spot to be in. Like I said, we just don't know Manchester City's situation. We should know a resolution on Man City and whether or not their ban will be upheld in early to mid-July. So right now, a lot of these clubs like Man United who hold this fifth spot, this is like that weird spot where right now you're Man United and you think, okay, this could be a route into the Champions League if we hold this spot. But they may know in the middle of this latter portion of this restart that it's not good enough. And they'll have to really kick on to try and get themselves back up into the top four. Their restart along those lines begins with an absolutely massive match on Friday against Tottenham. Manchester United ended right before the break playing pretty well after sweeping Manchester City for the first time in a decade. Who knows, like we've said before, the Bundesliga and La Liga restarts, if momentum means anything. I guess we'll find out. But that is a huge, huge game on Friday.
Yeah, it's a massive game. And the question will be, what kind of Manchester United come out of the blocks? Because like you said, they had a bit of a momentum going. There was a feel-good factor, and they've been chomping at the bit, certainly their fans have, to get back out on the field and try and kick on. And, you know, straight into the middle of the questions about Manchester United is placed the name of Paul Pogba. What role will he play in these games? Has he a future at Manchester United? Can he link with Bruno Fernandes to kick on and bring this team to a Champions League finish, which would be, I mean, would round off a pretty I mean, it has been a bad season for United for large parts, but this would be a very happy ending to it. A lot of questions here, Andrew.
Yeah, I know. His role is so interesting. Just because, you know, it's like you've almost forgotten he's part of the team. You feel like Manchester United have kind of moved on without him, but he is still there. And if he does come back and he's motivated and he fits into the scheme that they want to use him in, which I honestly don't know what that will be just yet, especially with Bruno Fernandes now there occupying a lot of the center.
We'll deal with that in the mailbag.
Oh. Yeah. By the way, another thing that will come up in the mailbag, but has to be mentioned now, for the Manchester United fans who maybe don't make it to the mailbag, Marcus Rashford, expected to be back. He had the back injury. We will talk about him later as well. But, you know, with United getting this lift of possibly having Pogba and Rashford back in the lineup, two guys that they had probably ruled out, you know, it could be huge for them.
Yeah, and I've kind of changed my tune a little bit on Pogba in terms of his future at United, because prior to the lockdown, I would have said, you know, he's out the door, he's going. But now I'm not so sure. Like, his list of possible destinations has surely shrunk, considering the financial constraints of COVID-19 that are being felt, you know, throughout football. So who, apart from Real Madrid, would have a need or a want for him? And if his return in this, say, 9-game period goes really well, could he reconsider his options? You know, a lot will depend.
You couldn't envision him going back to France, to PSG, something like that?
I mean, I could, but I honestly don't think they're obviously one of the teams that can afford him, but I don't think they have a need for him, Andrew. And
well, when has that stopped them before?
I know, but there's a lot of people to keep happy. If we take for granted Neymar will still be there, if we take for granted Kylian Mbappe will still be there, you're throwing Paul Pogba into the mix. There's financial fair play as well. A lot will depend on also. Mino Raiola will want one of his most prized assets commercially playing in a league other than the French league for most of the year, I would imagine. So a lot will depend on what Mino thinks, but maybe there's an avenue that he stays at United and these next 9 games are that avenue.
Well, it's kind of a tryout, I would say.
It certainly is, because, you know, United fans want to see something from him now, especially when there's something on the line.
Yeah. So those three, Leicester, Chelsea, and Manchester United, those were the three that I kind of grouped together as the front runners for this battle for the top four. Now we go to the contenders. We go to sixth place. Wolves occupy that spot. 2 points behind Manchester United for fifth. Wolves have 43 points. They've played 29 matches. I wanted to ask you something because I'm very curious what your answer would be for this, about if you had to assign a most valuable player for Wolves. Do you have one?
A lot of people would say João Moutinho.
I mean, I can give you one.
Some other people might say Connor Cody because of his durability. I would say Raul Jimenez, Andrew. 16 goals and 9 assists.
Yeah.
That is a multi-purpose striker. He's good in the air. He's good on the floor. He links the play. He works hard. He creates as well as scores. It's hard to look beyond him at this very moment. I mean, Jota is a really good player too.
Oh, I can't believe we've gone this far and you still haven't said the name that I was going to say.
Oh, go ahead.
Now, I'm not saying that this has been necessarily the best player in the league. However, for me, I think heading into an EPL weekend, if you told me you can only watch one player, like you're going to turn on the TV and your eyes can't leave this one guy, Adama Traore. He has been truly magnetic for me in a viewing experience of that club. And I'll tell you this, for some reason, I don't know why you're treating this with contempt. I guess you're just, it's just how you treat my opinions. That's fine. However, WhoScored.com, which give their player ratings, so far this season, he has the second highest overall rating of anybody in the league. He's completed 145 dribbles this season. That is the most in the league. He is a phenomenon. And, you know, it's not just about him, but I've been wondering, it's also because of all the players you mentioned, Jimenez, Jota, Moutinho, Neves. Like, I've been thinking about Wolves, and if they don't qualify for the Champions League, if they miss out, is it fair for the fans of that club to view this as a disappointment? And it's weird because it's Wolves, and I feel like that's an unfair expectation to place on a club like that, where not qualifying for a Champions League is disappointing. But it's hard for me to look at that lineup and not think that if you're a Wolves supporter, they must be thinking, we could be Leicester right now. We could be where they are. This team is that good to me.
I do think me and you at the start of the season, we talked about we saw that there was a top six in flux. And who did we put as the candidates to break into that this season?
Leicester and Wolves,
right. Yeah. And I think Wolves, because of their participation in Europe, may have had a little bit of a slower start. But you're right. And Andrew, we've got, at some point, and again, I am repeating myself from before, but we've got to start looking at Wolves as a project, not a project as lavish as City, Manchester City, or maybe even in the past Chelsea, but certainly as a project. This is a team that has a lot of knowledge. I was going to say insider knowledge there. I got to be careful with what I say because they've been cleared by the EFL in that regard. But this is a team that is clearly not here to be mid-placed, mid-table, to stay in the Premier League. They're here to compete in Europe and probably at some point to try and compete for major silverware. And you're right. Look at the way this team's been assembled. Look at the players it's got. It is a disappointment if they don't finish, you know, or if they don't really push hard at least for a Champions League spot. We can say it's only Wolves. Or, oh, you know, it's weird saying it about Wolves, but when you look at how they've been constructed with Fosun, with Gestefute, with Mendes, come on, let's be real here. Let's be realistic. This team is headed somewhere and has been, and the money has been spent appropriately.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing about them, like you compare, I get what you're doing, comparing the Wolves, quote unquote, project to Man City and Chelsea. What we don't know yet is, you know, with Man City and Chelsea, those were sustainable projects. Like, for whatever, you know, the money there was such that players, even though Manchester City as a club may not have had the stature of a Manchester United or Real Madrid or Barcelona, players weren't going to be fleeing Manchester City to go to those other clubs because they were happy at City and the money was good at City. Will Wolves be able to do that?
Well, we've seen that they've made aggressive steps to make sure that's happened. I mean, wasn't it the middle of this season? I was going to say last season. Was it the end of last season or the middle of this season? I can't even remember. But Jimenez was signed to a new contract right in the middle of it. Right. I mean, I believe the funds are there. Look at what they've done in the renovations to the stadium, which is a, Molyneux was always a lovely ground. But Wolves are here for the long haul and should be viewed as such.
Their last game of the season, by the way, is against Chelsea. Could be huge. That last week, good Lord. We have identified some huge games in that final week.
For sure.
Let's see. Seventh place right now. The story of the season so far, I really think you'd have to say, Sheffield United. They are tied on points currently with Wolves, 43 points. However, they are one of these clubs that have a match at hand. So, and that match is against Aston Villa, which, you know, you'd probably have to say that Sheffield United would be favored to win that game. So they could, once they're, everybody's evened up on 29 matches played, they could be on 46 points, which would bump them ahead of Manchester United into fifth.
Yes.
Sheffield United.
Yeah.
This is unbelievable. And really the only question that I can ask is, how are they doing this?
Well, Andrew, everyone talks about their overlapping center backs, and that is like a really unique feature of the way they play. But those center backs don't concede very much. It's themselves and Leicester behind Liverpool, Andrew, for the least amount of goals conceded. Sheffield United. That's incredible. They have a top-class goalkeeper in Henderson, who they've re-signed and extended his loan from Manchester United. In Norwood and Lundstrom, they have two very effective midfielders. Their attack is focused on the channels, and in that, both Baldak and Enda Stevens are hugely effective and useful. Up front is the real issue for them, and it may be turn out to be their Achilles heel over this nine-game stretch. They don't score much, but they do have hard workers in abundance, like David McGoldrick. They've developed a system under Chris Wilder. They are a really tight unit, Andrew. And they defend extremely well. And so far, the fact that they have a very low shot ratio has not killed them. But that will kill them at some point.
Yeah, I think for me too, the other thing worth mentioning, you know, we've talked a lot already about injuries that other teams contending for top four spots have been forced to deal with. Man United, we haven't even gotten to Spurs yet. You know, Chelsea have had their fair share. Sheffield United have not. And that is extremely fortunate when you're talking about a club that doesn't really have nearly the depth of some of these other clubs. I saw this mentioned at the Guardian. They mentioned how four of the back five for Sheffield United have not missed a game all season. And John Egan, the only player who has, he's only missed one. So they have been able to keep that cohesiveness intact for the entire year. And that can't be a coincidence to the stat that you mentioned, that they've been so tough to break down, because these guys clearly know each other's tendencies. They played with each other week in, week out. Trainings, they haven't had to miss trainings really. So, you know, health matters. Like we talk about, are injuries an excuse or a reason? I mean, it's a reason both ways, for the better and for the worse. And we're seeing it for the better with Sheffield United.
Imagine those pundits at the start of the season, and I won't name them because we all get things wrong, but who looked at Sheffield United and said, two things. The first thing they said was, oh, they're a very basic long ball team. No, they're not. And the second thing they said, oh, if you've got attacking center backs, overlapping center backs in the Premier League, you'll concede loads, you'll get ripped asunder. Wrong as well. They've completely rolled over their doubters. They now own their doubters. It's been incredible. I also think as well, the fact that at the start of the season, they didn't do what a lot of promoted clubs do and try and bring in as many kind of mid-range foreign imports to try and make sure they stay up. They didn't do any of that. And that definitely helped in the team's cohesiveness.
JJ, there's a part of me, this kind of like, you know how in The Dark Knight, they talk about the Joker and they say, some men just want to watch the world burn. It's one of my favorite lines in any movie. There's part of me where we'll get to Tottenham now in a sec. If Tottenham can't do this, if they can't make up these points and qualify for the Champions League, and Manchester City's European ban is upheld and they cannot qualify, I desperately want to see 3, 4, and 5 be Leicester, Wolves, and Sheffield United.
And I think there's many in the league who would love that too.
Just like for all those people out there who want the Champions League disbanded because they want this super league of all the European elites that can play together. Like this to me, if those three can do it on the budgets, now granted, it's a Premier League budget. So even the weakest of Premier League teams is still probably like one of the higher earning Serie A clubs, you know?
Right.
So, like, it's not like I have sympathy, a ton of sympathy for them. But, like, if those three, Leicester, Wolves, and Sheffield United, can do this over the likes of Arsenal and Manchester United, you know, and Tottenham, I mean, what an incredible story. And what a middle finger to this idea that we need some super league in Europe. Because, like, this is what a meritocracy is supposed to be. Sports is supposed to be a meritocracy. The best teams get to take part in the best competitions, not some BS cookie cutter made competition, you know, where we get, where some governing body gets to pick and choose who takes part. That's wrong.
Oh my God, Andrew, over this quarantine period, you've morphed into me. Oh, you little socialist, you. I totally agree with you. And I read an article just yesterday where this was a quote from a European club board meeting. So I'm presuming it was one of those nefarious ones that want us to have a Super League. And the quote was, oh, you definitely don't want to have too many Leicester cities.
Oh.
Ugh. Disgusting.
I can't tell you how much I despise comments like that. Now, having said that, we move now from 7th to 8th. And we begin the next category here, which I've identified as the rest of the field.
So kind. So kind to North London.
Tottenham, 8th place right now. They are currently 2 points behind Sheffield United, who are 7th. However, like we said, Sheffield United do have that match at hand. I did consider briefly putting Tottenham in the contender category. However, upon second thought, I don't think they deserve it. They haven't done enough this season for me to truly believe that they are a contender for this competition. Like, just removing the kit, the name, all that, kind of like what we did with Wolves. Like, if you strip away the title and you just look at that team, you'd think, yeah, this is a legitimate Champions League team. You know, Tottenham, we've kind of gotten used to them being a consistent Champions League team. But if I told you that there was a club that had produced only 4 clean sheets all season, they go matches on end without creating sustained spells of dominant play, you would not consider this team a contender for anything. I saw this stat at the BBC. Tottenham are averaging just 12.1 shots per game in the Premier League this season. That is their lowest on record across a single campaign in the competition since 97-98.
Oh, my God.
Like, this is, you know, sometimes the numbers do back up what your eyes and brain tell you. Like, I've watched every Tottenham match this season. There are just 40-minute periods where they do nothing. You know, and like, it's so funny to me. They played Manchester City twice this year. They took 4 points off of them. And, like, I just watch those games. Like, how are they doing this right now? You know, 30% possession, shot after shot against them.
And but yet Andrew,
do it. But, like, a lot of games this season against lesser opponents, they can't do anything.
You know how everyone's going to know that the Premier League is back? It's the patented caught offside Mourinho discussion. I'm going to keep this quick. I'm going to keep it quick because you are the Tottenham senator here. You're the representative from North Tottenhamsburg. I have very little to say about this. I will be shocked if they come back from this COVID-19 hiatus with a new sense of vim and vigor and, you know, passionate, free-flowing football. This is what Mourinho does. This is how he attempts to win. It doesn't work in the modern game anymore. And it's going to be rinse, repeat with Tottenham.
Well, we'll see. We will see. Now, I'm not picking them for anything right now either. They're going to have to prove me wrong. Look, they do have Harry Kane coming back. Again, that's a thing that they were not expecting. However, this break has afforded them, like everybody else, it has afforded them a healthy roster. You talk about Mourinho and his tactics and things like that and his man management. I am truly, truly curious about Tanguy Ndombele as we come down the stretch here, because you know that I have touted him all season long. I've seen the flashes from him that I believe that there is a player in there. And it appears from what he says and his actions that Mourinho hates his guts. But I once heard somebody talk about coaching, and they basically said that a player shouldn't worry when a coach is screaming at them. A player should worry when a coach stops screaming at them.
Right.
And so the fact that Mourinho has been so on Ndombele, it makes me wonder if Mourinho actually does believe that there is a player in there and he's just desperately trying to get that player out. Because in a perfect world, Ndombele is exactly what a Mourinho or any manager, but a Mourinho in particular would want. A defensive-minded player who was also fantastic in attack. And so I think Mourinho just knows that he has this diamond here that he just can't seem to unlock, and he's tried everything. So I mean,
he's tried everything to the point of breaking quarantine and lockdown regulations in the United Kingdom to spend time with him in a park.
I know.
Now, the cynic in me says this is just one of those Mourinho kind of smoke and mirrors jobs where he's like, look at me. I even broke down COVID-19 protocols and rules and regulations to go to a park with this guy. And I put in the hard yards, but it just won't work.
And maybe that is in the end the tack that he'll take, but we're not there yet. We haven't reached full on Mourinho scapegoating just yet.
We got very close in the middle of
You're right, but the break came and cooler heads were allowed to prevail. One note, Dele Alli will be suspended for Friday's match against Manchester United, not shockingly, for his insensitive social media post early on in the coronavirus. And by the way, we did talk about so many negative Tottenham stories from over the break, Aurier breaking protocol many times, Mourinho, Dele Alli, this and that. I do want to say one nice thing, kind of off the beaten path here, that we never really talked about. Son completed his military service in South Korea during this period, and the reports of his performance were actually quite impressive. I'm just reading here from some of what he is said to have achieved. He hit 10 out of 10 targets in M16 training. He received a 100 out of 100 in mental strength evaluation. A spokesperson for the Marine Corps said in a press release, Sun did exceptionally well in all areas of training, including military ethics and security education. He ranked JJ in the top 5 recruits out of 157. So props to him, man. Very cool.
No, it was. And it was so interesting to see the amount of press shots and pictures of him in full combat fatigues that the Koreans released for the media. He looked like he meant business.
I think he now becomes my answer to the question of if you could choose anyone to be in a foxhole with you, who would it be? Because he seems like the most awesome guy, but apparently he can also be an awesome soldier.
Yeah. I don't know if you've seen this, Andrew, from earlier today, just to update people. Tottenham Hotspur, this is the Manchester Evening News reporting this. Tottenham Hotspur have suffered a fresh injury blow and will be without young defender Japhet Tanganga for their match against Manchester United this week.
No, I had not seen that.
Well, it's important to end the Tottenham segment on a high note.
Yeah, let's go to Arsenal now, who are just behind Spurs in ninth, 40 points, 28 matches played. They do have that match at hand. However, it is against Manchester City. Obviously, the coronavirus break was inevitable. Obviously, every sport in the world was sent into a timeout because of this. However, I kind of feel like Arsenal and Mikel Arteta is kind of like the Premier League's Rudy Gobert. Like, it was always going to happen, but like, you know, Gobert's positive test in the United States is kind of what set off the, oh my God, this is real. Like, we're going to have to stop sports. Remember, that happened. The United States had shut everything down, but the Premier League was still going to go ahead with their matches over the weekend. And then once Arteta tested positive, it kind of had the Gobert effect on everyone there. So it was kind of Arsenal that got the ball rolling on the shutdown, is what I'm saying.
Well, and I'm the Mikel Arteta and the Rudy Gobert of this podcast as well.
Because you had coronavirus.
Yeah, correct.
However, the difference is this podcast did not shut down.
No, it didn't. I did one podcast where I thought I was going to die before the end of it. I was sweating so much.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I told you about that. I didn't tell you about the moist hoodie incident.
Oh.
Yeah.
This thing is no
collapsed.
Joke,
I collapsed on the sofa after that podcast. I was so exhausted. The fatigue.
I kind of want to go back and listen to it and see if I can eat. I couldn't tell. You're a warrior.
Oh.
I had no idea.
There should be a monument built to me.
With Arsenal, I put some questions here. One of them, I'm wondering if you have an answer to this. I'm curious what you think constitutes a successful season for them. Can they miss out on the Champions League and still feel good?
They can, but it's the manner in which they do it. So a new popular young manager replaces a deeply unpopular one midway through the season, like bang in the middle. So Arteta needs Arsenal to finish strong, Andrew. They've got Wolves, Leicester, Tottenham and Liverpool left on the slate. That's going to set the tone for Arteta for next season. Show the fans there is reason for hope and expectation. Like, they may fall short, but it's the manner in which they play that is all important. I think it's not going to go down well if they don't make it, but I'd say some Arsenal fans have resigned themselves to that fact. It's the way in which they do it. They need to leave a positive, strong memory of performances for the fans going into next season. That's the way I read it. The fact that he's come in mid-season has got to be a mitigating factor in his favor.
I'm going to say that they can't, and I'm going to read something to you here from Nick Ames in The Guardian. He wrote this about Arsenal as they prepare for their restart. He said, a £230 million wage bill is, with or without the agreed cuts, impossible to sustain if they fall short, and there will be further issues if the 2020-2021 season proceeds without crowds. Matchday revenues were £96 million during 18-19. There's a reason for Arteta's admission that there are, quote, one, two, three different scenarios for which he must plan ahead. So picking up where they left off is a must. And what a boost it would be if they can claim an early scalp at the Etihad. Aubameyang, it's still not certain if he's going to re-up his contract with Arsenal. And I think he's...
Well, the talk is that they will move him on rather than he will want to leave.
What are they thinking? Well, where would they be without him? Like, if think of any club right now who you remove one player from the equation, where would they be? I mean, my goodness, they're ninth. And it's with Aubameyang saving them, it feels like, time and time again.
Well, I rather naively ignored Arsenal financials for my answer there. I just felt as if they can get momentum going, that'll carry into next season, keep the fans happy. But no,
money matters.
It really does to them. They're not in a good position contract-wise. But Aubameyang is not replaceable. Not replaceable. And the reason we don't talk about him as much as we should do or haven't done in the past is because he's at Arsenal right now in the position they're in, but he is outstanding. And in the form what he's done for them since he's come into the club has been amazing.
Yeah. If he scores on Wednesday, he'll be the sixth fastest player in Premier League history to 50 EPL goals. So yeah. And it's funny though, because, you know, Arsenal fans will tell you about some of the goals that he's missed. Like, they just got bounced by Olympiacos in the Europa League, which might've been their best avenue in to the Champions League. Aubameyang missed a bad chance. You know, Spurs in the North London Derby last year missed a penalty.
I know, but honestly, that is just it. That does not reflect his contribution.
No, of course not.
But you're right. They were two big glaring misses. I don't know what happens to them. You know, if they don't make the Champions League, just from a money point of view, there could be Arteta could see the exodus of several players.
Yeah. Yeah. They're in a tough spot. And then JJ, I have even gone so far as to include in this category, 10th place Burnley and 11th place Crystal Palace. They are both tied on 39 points. I know some may laugh at their inclusion here, but they are just 6 points behind United for fifth. So I thought it was only right for them to at least be mentioned in this category.
I saw a really good piece in the little extract in The Guardian talking about Burnley. But before I do that, how happy are you as a Crystal Palace fan to be in this scenario?
Oh, my God. This is incredible. Yeah, of course. That's the obvious statement of the century. Now, I wanted to mention something about Burnley first. Is that all right?
Yeah.
So they're unbeaten in their last seven to get themselves into this position. And by the way, that includes wins over United, Leicester, Southampton. They also had a draw with Spurs. But I am going to rain on the Sean Dyche parade for a moment. I'm sorry to do that.
Why?
One thing to keep an eye on here. So the forwards for them, they're all hurt. Ashley Barnes is coming back from a hernia operation. Chris Wood has been receiving treatment on an Achilles situation. Jay Rodriguez picked up an injury just before the break. Now, at this point, I do believe that all three are expected to be available. But I'm just saying it's something to keep an eye on, given the fact that it's a club that doesn't score a ton to begin with. And if luck doesn't break their way, they could be in a really, really, really bad spot at that position. They're going to be looking for a lot of like 1-0 goal on corner kick type situations.
Which would be very them. I mean, it would seem very them.
Look, Chris Wood, what does he have, 11 goals this season?
Yeah.
He's been pretty good.
There was a paragraph from a piece Paul Wilson wrote about Burnley in The Guardian yesterday, and it kind of sums up this nether zone they find themselves in. Given their unhappy experience with Europa League fixtures 2 years ago, most fans of Burnley would happily settle for remaining where they are now. Considering the huge financial inequality within the Premier League, what Burnley do every year is amazing in itself. They are a model of efficiency and a beacon of hope to every club trying to fight their way out of the Championship. How long it can last is an annual guessing game, but next season will be their fifth consecutive top flight campaign, and Dyche will be approaching a decade in charge. According to their manager, the club's main ambition is simply to be regarded as an established Premier League club, and that goal is now in sight. Doesn't it just show you where things are, though? Burnley don't want to be in the Europa League because it hampers them being in the Premier League again, which is an amazing thing to do, but they can't actually go anywhere because if they are successful, they'll end up in a Europa League spot, which may jeopardize their position in the Premier League. They are stuck. They are trapped in the nether zone, Andrew.
Right. What would Louis van Gaal, like his chant for them would be like how
Van Gaal... We go for 10th place. Yeah. And we stay there forever.
Yep. Let's see. As for Palace, they went into the break winning 3 in a row, didn't concede a goal in any of those games. The goal for Palace, you talk about Burnley's position. Crystal Palace will be looking to set their new high for a finishing spot in the table. They were 10th in 2014-15. That was the best ever for the club. So it is within sight that they could better that this year. And I wanted to mention one thing here. Because we haven't done our red cards man of the match in a while, and I feel bad. I'm very sorry that I missed this. Club outreach. Crystal Palace staff made efforts to check on more than 1,000 supporters over the age of 70 to see if they could provide any assistance during this break, including going shopping for some season ticket holders. That is that's pretty grassroots and very nice in a sport that has become so corporate and just like, I don't know. You feel like the distance between fan and team has grown. But I read that and I thought, wow, that was really nice of them and kind of a refreshing thing to read.
And I always say this, though. Premier League teams like to portray themselves as the center of their communities. Well, act like it. And that's why it's brilliant when you see Crystal Palace doing something like that. They're not the only club that's done it. And I think some of the bigger clubs could follow their lead in this regard a lot. But by the way, just on Palace, when you think of the tatters Roy Hodgson's reputation was after the debacle in Euro 2016 against Iceland, like this is a guy who had traveled around the world, who had, he managed in Switzerland, he had managed Inter Milan. He deserved respect, and it was such a humiliation for him to lead his country into a knockout game, which they were knocked out by a minnow. Like Iceland, to see what he's done at Palace ever since. I mean, he's well into his 70s. I mean, here's a guy I think should be wearing a mask on the sideline for his health.
He's 72, right? I believe.
Yeah. I'm just glad that I can't be sure. Because listening to Neil Warnock the other day, Neil Warnock sounded like he's chomping at the bit for another job. So I'm not saying this will be Hodgson's last job in football at this level, but it probably will be, more than likely. And just for him to go out on, or for him to be at this level now, whatever way he goes out is going to be, he'll have done a great job.
Well, what it will allow him to do potentially is to go out on his own terms. Like exactly. If they continue to win this way, then he'll have a job for as long as he wants one. And that's a nice way for a career to end.
Andrew, we have to move on. We are way over time here.
This is madness. Okay, we'll go now. So that's the Champions League places. We go now to the fight to avoid relegation. A lot of these, admittedly, I don't have a ton to say about. Norwich right now are bottom, 21 points. Is there any hope for them? I would tend to say probably not. I don't mean to be like flippant about it, but
no. 538 have a 95% chance that they'll be relegated on their modeling. It's an enormous ask, Andrew. They've got Southampton, Everton, Arsenal, Brighton, Watford, West Ham, Chelsea, Burnley, and Manchester City in that mix. Yeah. It's too much. They'd need to win too many games. It's not happening.
19th place right now is Aston Villa, 25 points, 28 matches played. They could be out of the drop zone if they win their game at hand on Wednesday against Sheffield United. They were terrible before the break, crushed by Leicester, losses to Bournemouth and Southampton. I think they lost four straight heading into this unforeseen break. Here's the key stat that I saw for them. They lead the league in defensive errors leading to a shot. Now, I talk about this sometimes, JJ, where in all sports, like the NFL, you know, I've been watching the NFL since I was 4 years old. I find that you still can learn things as you get older. Like the more I watch the NFL, the more I tend to feel that the offensive line is everything. Like I feel like in soccer, the more I watch the Premier League, MLS, international, it's all the same for me in that the more I see unforced errors committed by clubs, sloppiness, things like that, the more that I see it, it's kind of what it's all about. Limit the opportunities to allow your opponent an easy goal scoring chance. You know, from these, I think Aston Villa have conceded 10 goals from an error.
That's like, just brutal.
It's the worst in the league so far this season. I think them and Newcastle are tied in that spot. Like that's why they are where they are. Cause I look at them, I don't think they're a terrible team, but they just have these mental lapses and it could be what sends them down.
Yeah. And also another thing, and it just when you're kind of researching or you're thinking about the league coming back and you look at the relegation zone, Andrew, scoring goals is the other key thing.
Well, yeah.
You know, it's a massive, it sounds so obvious, but, you know, they'll welcome back John McGinn. That is huge for him. The fact that the COVID break has allowed him to get fit. Wesley is not there, though. So where are the goals coming from? It's going to fall to El Ghazi probably, but it's going to fall largely as well on McGinn and Jack Grealish to kind of propel them forward. And like you said, when they're making mistakes in other areas of the field, there's a lot of outlay on this team as well. I don't know. I know they've got that game in hand, and that game is at Villa Park.
Does against that matter? Sheffield. Do we even know if that matters?
That's the point. I mean, it's not. And if you look how supremely well-drilled Chris Wilder's teams are, I mean, getting a point seems like the best they'll do there. I say that. I don't know.
I guess what they have to hope for is that these other teams are all so bad that it may only take like two or three wins in these final nine games, or for them, 10 games. Speaking of which, up next, 18th is Bournemouth, 27 points. You just wonder, because Bournemouth had kind of been like what you just talked about with Burnley, where they're supposed to be an established club. Bournemouth were teetering on being that,
right?
But it's all gone so wrong for them. You know, again, I talk about injuries. It hasn't helped. David Brooks was vital to what they did last year.
He returns.
He comes back now. So we'll see if that makes a difference for them. And the other thing, it's not just injuries. The other thing, you know, like you talk about obvious statements, goals matter. Well, performance matters. And Callum Wilson, who they've relied upon for goals over the past few seasons, let's call it what it is. He's been terrible this season. He went 15 games scoreless. Now, he did get three in his last six leading into the break.
Yeah.
But overall, I think like Bournemouth have always been a club since they've come up to the Premier League that concede a lot but score a lot. Well, when Callum Wilson, who you rely upon for those goals, is having the season that he's having, you can remove the score a lot from the equation. And instead, it's just score a little, concede a lot. That's why they're 18.
There's another key thing in this, Andrew, for me, is first of all, their counter-attacking has not been good enough. You know, if you look at the solid performance they put in their defeat, the 2-1 defeat to Liverpool at Anfield, you know, there was signs of life there. But if you look at their finishing on the counter, it was squanderous. You know, they could have at least got a point at Anfield that day. Liverpool fans will be be honest about there about that. Here's one for me. Ryan Fraser's been off the boil. He's been completely off the boil. He's admitted he's been off the boil. Contract issues have been a problem for him. What's interesting, though, and it passed me by, and I don't know how. I don't know, did you see this? He pretty much admitted that his drop-off this season is due to being unsettled about his contract and his deal, and that he genuinely hasn't put in the same amount of effort as he did last season. Like, for a professional footballer, that's such an incredible thing to admit.
That's awful to hear a guy say that.
It is. I know I'm paraphrasing, but that's pretty much what he said.
Yeah.
And if you look at their attack, Andrew, so much of their attack goes down the left-hand side. So if he is not performing, that is a huge, huge problem for them. Another thing with them is, and I read this, Jefferson Lerma, who is their, you know, their expensive central midfielder, you know, he's going to be vital for them in this effort to stay up. And he is one yellow away from a 2-game suspension. Apart from maybe fullback or center back, center midfield is the last place you want to be sitting on a suspension, ready to go. They'll lose him for 2 games, and that could be crucial too. I did a whole thing a couple of podcasts back before the break for COVID-19 about just how bad Bournemouth's signings have been in attack in particular, Jordan Ibe and guys like that, how they've not been good enough. And I wonder if Brooks coming back and Fraser kind of pulling up his socks for the time he's got left at Bournemouth could be the key to a great escape.
Well, here's who they're chasing. Watford right now are 17th, 27 points. You know, I guess they kind of got that new manager bounce from the ostrich man, Nigel Pearson, but the bounce is kind of worn off. 1 win in their last 7. I just keep thinking, like, they've been held scoreless 13 times this season. How were they the club that beat Liverpool? It's just going to forever be one of those. I mean, I guess Ismail Assar coming back has been important for them.
Sarr coming back. Deeney had a day, an absolute day. Lovren was playing, and it was just a bad matchup. Whatever should have happened that day for Liverpool, it shouldn't have been Deeney versus Lovren for so many aerial duels. But, you know, Liverpool had an off day, and Watford are just out of the relegation zone by goals, I believe. So,
yeah, that's correct.
That's not good.
No, because they don't score many goals.
No. I don't know, Andrew. There's a 25% chance, according to 538, that they'll go down. So
we'll see.
We shall see.
16th right now is West Ham, 27 points also. First 3 matches of the restart, Wolves, Spurs, Chelsea, bang. We may know quickly just how grave their danger is.
Yeah.
Horrifying stat here from the BBC about West Ham. West Ham have lost more points, 22, from winning positions than any other side in the Premier League this season.
Oh, my God.
So if you go down 1-0 against West Ham, it's all good. Don't worry. You'll be fine.
In looking at West Ham, something that struck me, Andrew, think of the high-profile signings that they've had, your Yarmolenkos, your Jack Wilshere's, your Lanzini's, your Anderson's, your Haller's, all those guys. It's Robert Snodgrass, 10 million from Hull, who has been this season the consistent chance maker. He's going to need to be able to do that, recreate that form from earlier in the season to create the chances that they will need to stay up. Good old David Moisey.
And then finally, Brighton are 15th, 29 points. They were kind of in free fall mode before the break. I don't know any reason to believe that free fall will come to a halt.
Not really, Andrew, to be honest with you. It you know, they're a team that, you know, tries to pass the ball, tries to play it. Has the break done them any favors? Not so sure about that. I'd be very concerned for Graham Potter's team, to be perfectly honest with you. And again, not to bang the drum on about it, but, you know, for large parts of the season, he's been relying on, you know, young strikers like Aaron Connolly to get it done. And, you know, that's a lot to expect. Goals are going to be an issue for them. I would be extremely concerned if I'm a Brighton fan.
Yeah, I would agree with that, as a matter of fact. So that's pretty much our look at the key elements of the restart. Now, for the Newcastle, Everton, there are like three or four teams that we didn't really mention in there that are just kind of, I guess, playing out the string. Maybe Everton could say they're a part of a race for a Europa League spot. I don't know. I would say that they would be a club that would covet that. One of the few, I think, that would actually like really want to fight for that. We'll talk more about them, though, I promise, next week on the podcast.
Yeah, look, the teams we haven't got to are, there's a good reason. They're not really in the hunt for very much. So as the games go, I guess we'll get to talk. I mean, Everton fans are going to be very upset if they finish this season. We're going to talk about them in terms of the Merseyside Derby after that game. So, you know.
Yeah. So just relax, everyone. It's going to be all right. Let's see, a couple other things that we probably should mention before we get out here. La Liga made its return. Just a couple quick observations. I kind of liked the posture that Zidane took with his team afterwards, because they were coasting. The first half was a clinic, and then they let their guard down. And not that it got close, but they just didn't look like what Zidane expects of them if they're going to really contend with Barcelona to win this title. And he took them to task afterwards. He was mad. I think that sends the right message. Still a 3-1 win for them. They keep pace with Barcelona. But, you know, I like the approach that he's come back in with.
I don't think it sends any message, really, honest with you.
Oh, there you have it.
He'll know himself when you're, 3-0 up at halftime against Eibar. Look, it's always possible complacency will set in. That's just the kind of posturing that you have to do as manager. Don't believe a word of it.
Let's see. While we talk about the title race, remember when we were like kind of worried about Messi's fitness? How about a goal and two assists over the weekend? 9 successful dribbles, 6 key passes. He received a perfect 10 match rating for his performance in the game. He was, in a word, brilliant.
What about his assist to Martin Braithwaite? That was the thing that struck me. Messi to Braithwaite, and a brilliant finish from Braithwaite. And Braithwaite could have had a hat trick, really.
It'll be interesting to see what his contribution is. He did not really celebrate after the goal. I feel like, I don't know, he was like very stern and just kind of feels like he should be doing this. So, I don't know, his route there is just like the most un-Barcelona route that you could think of for a player.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, someone asked who should be more excited about what they've done, Idian Agallo being at United or Braithwaite being at Barcelona. Agallo turned down Barcelona to stay in China and then got a second chance to play for a massive team in Man United in another window. How insane is that?
And then finally, Atletico Madrid, not that Bilbao is an easy place to go to, although again, with no fans and stands, I don't know what it means, but another draw. For Atletico Madrid, their 13th draw of the season. One more will actually set a club record for them for draws in a single campaign. So they 1-1, it ends. Diego Costa gets in the score sheet, scoring in the 39th to equalize after Bilbao had scored in the 37th. But not the way that Atletico Madrid wanted to begin the restart if they want to get back. I mean, they're in the thick of the race for a top four spot. But I don't know. All season long, we've been waiting for them to kick on, and it just has been a very slow burn.
Yeah, it's kind of basically what they've been all season. That draw is representative of it.
Yeah, and then last but not least here, Bayern Munich in the Bundesliga, they get a late goal, grab all 3 points, closing in now on another title. They have, I mean, it was close for them to come back or to win this game, but they have done everything asked of them so far in this restart. I think they're kind of now shifting gears into Champions League mode.
They're now in the phase where they can lose games, or not lose games, but play poorly and not lose games, which is a big problem as well. Speaking of the Champions League, Andrew.
Yeah.
The Champions League final is heading to Lisbon with UEFA planning an August 23rd final.
Well, not just the final.
Yeah, they're going to have 7 broadcast nights in a 12-day span of elite European teams playing a tournament style mini World Cup.
Yeah, single leg, right?
Yep, apparently.
From August 12th to August 23rd, they'll play out the quarterfinal, semifinal, and final in in Lisbon. So,
to be honest with you, Andrew, August, July and August are ICC for me strictly. So I won't be watching. If it's not the ICC in the summer, I don't want to know about it.
Well, I'll keep you informed. Don't worry.
I think it's a good idea though, right?
Yeah.
I mean what other options? What other options have they really? So
yeah. I mean, the single leg thing, like, I don't know, does that change the competition an element where it's hard to view this as being like your typical, like a regular Champions League winner?
Well, of course. But right. Like, again, we're living within these constrained times. And the last thing you want is massive squads jetting all over Europe to play games over two legs. It's just not possible. You still haven't got your head around what we're living in right now.
That's an insane comment by you. Take it back. But I'm just wondering if they could have done this over just a lengthier period of time, like brought these clubs to Lisbon.
They're clearly trying to preserve as much as they possibly can of some downtime before domestic seasons start again in the fall and before European football starts again.
And then you have a mailbag here to close out on.
I do indeed. We're going to start off with Joey, Andrew. I've read that instead of the names of players, Premier League players will wear Black Lives Matter on their backs for the first 12 games of the season. What do you think of this idea? Andrew, what do you
think? Totally good with it. Totally fine with it. Like it. Think it's nice. I got no issue with it whatsoever.
Yeah.
I would hope that that's...
No. So I thought about it, and at first I thought it was a cool idea, but now I think it's pretty much utterly pointless. We've had 15 years of kick it out t-shirts and initiatives. In 2005, Andrew, I don't know if you remember, we had the Stand Up Speak Out initiative. They had Nike Livestrong style wristbands of black and white for that. T-shirts and bands have moved on to hashtags and blacked out Instagram photos. And while it feels like an awakening, this kind of gesture is ultimately meaningless without direct action. Adding Black Lives Matter to the jerseys already adorned with multiple sponsors kind of just subsumes the meaning into the vacuity of the rest of the league.
Oh, man. My God.
Listen, yeah, Andrew.
Has anyone suggested that this is going to be the only action taken by
No, but you've got to put it in context. Look what happened this week. How can anybody take them wearing Black Lives Matter on their jerseys? Now, I know it was led by the players, which was good, but it was approved by the Premier League. When the Premier League will not adopt the Rooney Rule, like the EFL and the FA already have done. This is from The Guardian today. The league will not react by bringing in the Rooney Rule. React means in terms of what's happened over the protest over the George Floyd murder, which would require clubs to interview at least one black and ethnic minority candidate when hiring a manager, and instead plans to develop other anti-racism work. And it's not just like me that's saying this. Jermaine Defoe spoke out this week to TalkSport. He said, basically asked the question, is there any point doing my coaching badges? Throughout my whole career, I've supported these campaigns like Kick It Out, when you meet up in pre-season and get your pictures taken and you hold cards up. But then you think, all these years doing these things, has anything changed? Let's be honest, has anything changed? So of course it makes you look and think, is it worth me doing my coaching badges, as realistically, am I going to get an opportunity? Like, to that backdrop, this is just nothing.
Here's what it does.
12 games wearing Black Lives Matter is a nice gesture, but like, honestly, the Premier League have got to be challenged. Where's the League Managers Association on this? Why isn't there more black managers in the league? Any black managers in the league? You know, crazy to me. It just seems like history repeating.
Am I implying that these Black Lives Matter name tags on the back of a jersey is going to solve that problem? However, what it does is it keeps the message front and center. It will not allow the message to disintegrate as the season progresses. Every time a player turns around, you are going to see it. You're going to be reminded of it. It keeps it in the forefront of your mind.
12 games out of the 92 in this truncated end to the season.
So for the next, when does the season run? For the next month and a half, is it? Or so? Fine. Okay, fine. How can that ever be perceived as a negative? No one's saying that this is going to solve the problem. But every single time a guy runs out onto the field, you're going to see it on every single player. It's going to be mentioned in every single broadcast. They will not let it leave the front lobe of your brain. Like, that's important to keep it relevant.
15 years doing this, Andrew.
No, not like this. Come on, man. This is
no.
You don't see that this moment is different than everything that's happened over the last 15 years.
We've been genuinely
sure, but this is a different. This is
why
a moment.
Why are you? You're not even listening to me. I never said the moment wasn't different. I'm saying the reaction of the institutions is exactly the same. Why aren't they adopting the Rooney Rule? Why aren't they having? And you know, they should have announced some kind of an investigation into why there are so few opportunities for black managers in the league after they finish playing. Like Jermaine Defoe, such a key player in the Premier League history, and such like an obvious person to say something like, what's the point of me doing my badges? What are you like? That is an indictment, Andrew.
It is. And it's good that he's speaking out. That's what I'm saying. It's like this moment is different because people are listening now to Jermaine Defoe saying that in a way that they, for whatever reason, wrongly not listening to that for however many years, people are listening now. The Premier League is not going to be allowed to get away with it. They're just not. It's going to come to a head. And I'm not saying that guys wearing Black Lives Matter name tag on the back of a jersey is going to solve that issue. But the longer that this remains relevant and in people's minds, the better it is for their cause. It's a very small gesture. You're 100% right about that, but it keeps it relevant. The Premier League, everything you're saying about the managerial situation is 100% correct, but they're not going to be allowed to get away with it because people are going to keep thinking and talking about it. This is different.
I think that's what's kept things relative is the protests we've seen in the United States, which force uncomfortable situations and conversations to happen. And I feel as if Black Lives Matter on a jersey with all the other sponsorship that's on it, I don't see the point.
Right. What else do you have here in the mail?
All right. Daniel Waldron. If there is to be a hero in the days to come, someone who pulls his team into Europe, saves them from the drop, wins the Reds the title. Well, that's kind of going to happen anyway. Who would you wish it to be? Or another way, who are you rooting for to succeed?
I actually found this to be really easy. I'm removing all Tottenham fandom from this, obviously. But I would say Marcus Rashford for Manchester United. Finishing in a Champions League place. Look, he's a wonderful player. We all know that. And he's really come into his own as a player in the last year or so. Coming back from a back injury, which for a young guy, that injury in particular kind of worries me if he could be headed down a path of that being a chronic thing. And now we're starting to see just what an incredibly well-rounded and terrific human being he is. Like he's kind of found himself as a player. And now, you know, I'm sure he's always been a tremendous guy, but like through this sport, we're all now getting to know him and his, you know, the work that he's done off the field to try to help underprivileged youths get free meals, you know, and, you know, in the face of an English government that has gone against that and opposed it. And he's continued to work hard at it. You know, his charity has done unbelievable things. He just seems like such a wonderful guy and someone that I find to be very, very easy to root for. I thought that was a pretty easy question for myself, actually.
That's a great shout. I've gone a different direction. I've gone with Dean Smith keeping Villa up. His dad was a caretaker, a worker at Villa Park and a Villa fan. And Jack Grealish in what may probably be his last act for the club, because it's very hard to see whether they're in the Championship or in the Premier League, Jack Grealish being at the club. So that'd be amazing. I think Dean Smith's dad died only recently as well. So, let me see. Oh, this is a quick one. We mentioned it earlier. Cody Brummel. Will we see Bruno and Pogba in the same United side, and will it work defensively if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer decides to go in that direction? If United were playing, I've seen this everywhere and I don't understand it. If United were playing like a traditional 4-4-2, where the two centre midfielders, one is inclined to sit, one gets forward, a la Roy Keane and Scholes, then I'd be worried because neither of those have the defensive acumen. But I can't see, I see Bruno and Pogba being in the same side. I would do that. But defensively in midfield, I would see Matic or McTominay being there anyway. You're not going to have just those two guys in the center of the park. Hamilton, thoughts on Raf Hasenhüttl's new four-year deal at Southampton, indication of a potential push for Europe in the future? Andrew?
Well, that last part, I don't know necessarily. I do think it's a nice story in that how many managers would be allowed to get off at the start that they got off to, including a 9-0 pasting. He was given a chance to right the ship and kind of right the wrongs of the early part of the season. He did. 6 straight unbeaten over the holiday period, got them back in the position that they're in now, which is essentially it's safety. you know, we didn't talk about them in the relegation battle or the top four battle. They're just kind of, they're just good right now. However, started to get a little bit bad for them before the break. Terrible versus West Ham in a 3-1 loss, a 1-0 loss also to Newcastle. So it was starting to shake a little bit for them, but good for Hasenhüttl. You know, we thought that he was a good appointment for them. And, you know, I'm glad to see that they Southampton was rewarded for giving him a chance to make up for the bad start to the season.
Yep. And finally, Daniel Bradley, who's the team that looks safe, that's about to backslide into a relegation battle. I don't think that Newcastle and Southampton are going to get sucked into it's mathematically plausible, but I don't think they'll get sucked into a relegation battle. I would say this, though, and I know they're not safe and it wouldn't be really backsliding, but were Brighton to go down, if you look at the list of fixtures that Brighton have, they've got Arsenal, Leicester, United, Norwich, Liverpool, City, Southampton, Newcastle, and then they finish the season against Burnley. I mean,
they're going to have to just rely on everyone below them being also terrible.
Correct. And maybe try and pick up a few points against fellow strugglers like Newcastle and Norwich. But that is grim reading if you're a Brighton fan, just to reiterate that point. And that is the mailbag, Andrew. We really don't have time for any more.
Yeah, that is, in addition to being the mailbag, that is also the show. Wow. I feel ready. I feel prepared. I'm excited about it, honestly.
I want games to talk about. I can't wait for the derby. Cannot wait. I can't wait for Sheffield United and Aston Villa. Think about those words. That was a championship game last season.
Yeah, I've got Spurs Manchester United on Friday. And like with everybody working from home, you can kind of like work and watch with a little more ease than everyone's previous kind of midweek fixture situations that you had. So this will be some needed fun added to our lives as people who love this league. It should be a crazy end of the season. The battle for the top four is absolutely bonkers, as we detailed. The relegation race is crazy. So even though the title race has been decided for months, there's still a lot to play for. It should be a lot of fun. This was fun, man. To you, I say...
Check you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care, Andrew.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.